I'm torn now because I want to introduce Ondine, but I actually just want to talk about punk rock with Ondine because this is what has brought us together. And in fact, it's actually what I'm beginning to notice. It's actually what has brought together another generation of scholars and artists. I mean, if you look in the Phantom Sighting Show, there'll be so many references to the vibrant print culture, music culture, visual culture that took place in Los Angeles and its surroundings from 1979. Purists would say till about 1982 or 1983, but I'm not someone of the purists. And what it brought together, and I think that, I know that this is one of Ondine's beloved projects, as it is one of mine. But today he's going to talk about the relationship between ASCO's ASCO mural, the moratorium on muralism in El Monte, and then tie that together to Mario Barra's Belmont ruins. Ondine Chavoye is Associate Professor of Contemporary Art and Latino-Latina Studies at Williams College. He is an art historian, writer, and sometime curator who lives and works in New England, but he calls Los Angeles home. Chavoye's writings on art and urban space in Southern California have appeared in prestigious journals and anthologies such as the Chicanajo Cultural Studies Reader, The Interventionist, Only Skin Deep, Changing Visions of American Self, from 2003. And soon to appear is his book project, Orphans of Modernism. And at present, he's finalizing this manuscript for publication. Its full title is Orphans of Modernism, Chicano Art, and Urban Spaces in Southern California. Please welcome Ondine Chavoye. So I want to briefly thank you all for coming and for the lovely introduction. I just want to briefly outline two stories. One's not very well known, one is known. I won't be discussing Mario Ibarra's Belmont Ruins, I'll be discussing two other projects. So I want to discuss these stories and then connect them to some works in the show. This is the first, probably less known story. In 1976, a group of residents and business owners banded together in the city of El Monte to wipe out graffiti, and in a series of city council meetings threatened to form an armed vigilante group to stop graffiti and vandalism. The group warned that unless the city acted to curb graffiti, they would wait with loaded shotguns for the vandals to strike. A spokesperson for the homeowners and businessmen declared, "Some people are going to get killed, that's all there is to it." To which Mayor Albert Pettis pleaded, "Please don't take the law in your own hands." The city council and the sheriff's department pledged their cooperation and initially enlisted the Boys Club to help clean up the graffiti. Later that year, while working with the angry local residents, the city of El Monte enlisted the services of CETA, the Comprehensive Employment Training Act, to hire 11 artists through the county's multi-services center to develop a community arts program that would promote muralism as a means to bolster the citywide attack on graffiti. But tensions between the CETA artists and the city of El Monte arose when several murals painted by the CETA artists angered some who believed that the murals were intended to stir up insurgency. Strong objections to a painting on the wall of a downtown store showing a female Mexican revolutionary, an Adelita, with a gun, developed into a full-scale controversy over the merits of muralism in general. The mural painted by the artists Gronk and Roberto Gil de Montes in late 1976, and it was actually painted on the exterior wall of a Red Wing shoe store, at Valley Mall and El Monte Avenue, depicted this Adelita with bandoleros crossing her chest, carrying a rifle in one hand and a bleeding rose in the other hand. The city council unanimously adopted an emergency ordinance imposing a 4-month moratorium on any alterations on the outside of buildings in the Valley Mall area of the city. In March 1977, the city council voted to extend the moratorium for another 8 months and also expanded the moratorium to include all commercial and industrial buildings in the city. This is what the former mayor of Elmer Jeromson said about this. I hope I never see the day when we have murals all over the downtown shopping area. They have no business in the downtown business area. And a resident spokeswoman for the group said, the people here don't want murals. We want clean walls. We're not living in Mexico. This is El Monte. And a city council candidate asked, what art is there in the machine gun girl, referring to this Adelita mural? If they want to see art, let them go to the museum. Close quote. 1976, 1977, I think Oscar's Spray Paint Lacma helps to put that in perspective as to what those opportunities and options were of seeing art in those museums. But more related to this, it was this moratorium that precipitated the founding of LACE, Los Angeles Contemporary Exhibitions. Since the mural workshop that was essentially ousted, and it had to relocate to downtown LA. And it's through that, through this kind of mural workshop ousted from El Monte, that Los Angeles Contemporary Exhibitions becomes one of the premier exhibition spaces for experimental contemporary art in California and the Southwest more broadly. This is just one tiny micro-narrative, part of a longer history of effaced, censored, whitewashed, or otherwise destroyed public artworks in Los Angeles. And just speaking on the context of muralism, some of these have begun to reappear phantom-like, such as Kent Twitchell's 1974 Old Woman of the Freeway, or in the process of reemerging, such as Siqueiros' 1932 of America Tropical through conservation efforts, or others are in the process of going through alterations or reemerging, like Willie Hedlund's The Wall That Cracked Open, while others have been irreparably obliterated, such as the El Monte Adelita by Roberto Gil de Montes and Gronk, and the East Los Streetscapers' Ancient Energies, their 1980 mural that was done for a Shell oil service station in Boyle Heights. And then still others, and I think this is the point that I want to make with this, because of this kind of moratorium, this anxiety about the presence, the public presence of Chicano and Latino aesthetics in the city, there were at the same time developing these necessarily temporary, fugitive, impermanent, and ephemeral interventions and forms of muralism, such as Oscar's that we see here, their asshole mural. These were produced through hit-and-run tactics and guerrilla interventions. We can also include within this Spray Paint LACMA and the Cultural Research Society's Operation Invisible Monument, which I'll show you in a second, or Ruben Ortiz Torres's mobile graffiti projector, the Manhattan Project. So whether site-specific or mobilized, these ephemeral, potentially interventionist public projects challenge the parameters of art in urban space while often exposing its tacit limits and exclusions. So I just want to give you some examples of how muralism and graffiti were rendered performative, occasionally interactive, and potentially interventionist as a means to, among other things, identify and examine both hidden and blatant power relationships in the city. It's this consistent engagement with the city that these unannounced urban interventions or otherwise ephemeral art practices share a desire to re-signify the city, and in the process evoke a sense of memory and alternative histories, and through this interfere with the solidity of the present while potentially enabling alternative futures to be imagined. In Oscar's Spray Paint LACMA, which is where in many ways this show begins, we all know this story. This one's becoming much better known thanks to the efforts of many of us in this room and some who couldn't join us today, and of course the artists themselves. Harry Gamboa Jr. walks through the museum here, the Los Angeles County Museum of Art, is with a date and recognizes that there's not one example of Chicano art or Mexican art even in any of the contemporary modern galleries. Somehow organizes an impromptu, or kind of lands into an impromptu meeting with one of the curators, and is asked about this kind of non-existent inclusion of Chicano art in the collection, and is told Chicanos don't make art. They either make folk art or they're in gang. So in reply, Moscow, in gang-style fashion, tagged the museum, thereby claiming the museum and all of its contents as their own artwork, the first work of Chicano conceptual art ever to be exhibited at the LA County Museum of Art, which was the museum itself. And it's this kind of fugitive practice that has proved incredibly influential for a subsequent generation of artists in both concept and practice. And it's precisely this legacy. I mean, the piece was whitewashed within a matter of hours the next morning, but documented photographically. So that even if the conceptual artwork and intervention existed simply as rumor or urban legend, it has had an indelible influence. And it's this influence, precisely this influence and legacy, that this exhibition, Bantam Sightings, sets out to consider and analyze and chronicle. In another series of performances, OSCO members appointed themselves municipal officials to East Los Angeles. And they toured their municipality on random sites visits, designating various spaces to be civic landmarks, monuments, and preservation zones. In one such no-movie performance, a storm drain was anointed the illustrious title, and here we have it, of Asshole Mural. As such, the artists identified the city's waste or storm disposal system as the city's asshole and claimed it as their ready-made mural. Traditionally, monuments mark, embody, and make visible power relationships. Cultural geographer Stephen Pyle has described this process as making space incontestable, both by closing off alternative readings and by drawing people into the presumption that the values they represent are shared. In contrast, OSCO's ephemeral performance challenges the sanctioned durable autonomy of monuments as grids of social meaning and of state power. The tactic utilized is to usurp the authority and the power invested in the civic heritage industry. So Asshole Mural is a performative, active invention of monuments, and in the process marks an absence. And this is a process that is continued, I think, with a nod to Asshole Mural by the Cultural Research Society of Erased and Invisible Histories, or the PRS, a collection of artists, activists, and Rasquache historians who reside in Los Angeles. In their founding statement, the PRS claims to understand history as a battleground of the present and has dedicated itself to the systematic investigation of space, memory, and displacement. In its various projects, the PRS has identified strategic sites in an effort to pay homage to historic erasure and confront the construction of history through public monuments. A semi-anonymous simulated collective, orchestrated by its one official member, Sandra de la Rosa, the PRS appropriated or repurposed the historical plaque for the clandestine Operation Invisible Monument for 2002. These monuments commemorate moments in Los Angeles history or perspectives on it that have not been officially recognized through unsanctioned historical markers. According to the artist Sandra de la Rosa, quote, Los Angeles is a rich and fertile terrain for the investigation of bulldozed and forgotten stories, close quote. This theory is perhaps metaphorically exemplified in the historical narrative and struggles over the whitewashed David Alvaro Siqueiros mural, Tropical America, situated in the outside second story wall of Olvera Street's Italian Hall in downtown LA. And appropriately, the PRS did such a monument to invisible history to the Siqueiros mural. In Invisible Monument number 3, operatives placed a surrogate monument alongside one paying tribute to the site of Dodger Stadium. The displacement of the displaced, as this one was known, was installed on Cinco de Mayo in 2001 at Angels Point Vista in Elysian Park. The PRS monument narrated the displacement of the inhabitants of Chavez Ravine, a community of mainly Mexican-American families that existed until the development of Dodger Stadium. The monuments of erased and invisible histories are physical-sighted and visible for only as long as their camouflaged materiality, their impersonation of the sanctioned format to insert and cloak the unsanctioned content, functions effectively to veil these defiant insertions. That is to say that they remain in place only until they are recognized as being out of place and unofficial. at which point they are generally and fairly consistently removed. For example, this invisible monument was removed within 3 weeks, while the graffiti, which you can see here barely on the official plaque, while the graffiti on the accompanying official plaque was left in place. Thus, like Osco's No Movies, Asshole Murals, Spray Paint LACMA, and many others, photography is used to document a necessarily ephemeral public performance, and the resultant landmarks ultimately exist only as documentary photographic evidence of this performative urban intervention. And very quickly, I want to close with a more recent project from 2004 that the artist Ruben Ortiz Torres completed while in residence in New York City at Art in General. These projects were considered by the artist a series of quantum public art projects because they existed as a virtual simulacrum and were developed as elements in a larger series with the capacity for further proliferation. Using 3D animation and morphing software, these projects produced a confusion of the animate and the inanimate simulation and dissimulation, as well as strange simultaneity, which is, I think, strange simultaneity has something to do with phantoms and hauntings, this transgression of time and place. The Manhattan Project, which is the title of this piece, was subtitled Low-Res Crimes, has several interrelated components, one of which is an exhibit in the galleries at the museum. In the process of technical and aesthetic experimentation, the artist digitally altered graffiti found in Los Angeles into three-dimensional animations. A documentary video demonstrates these figural transformations. Morphing before our eyes, the graffiti begins to take on the form of mutant sculptural abstractions. And this process was used to produce an actual sculpture modeled after the morphed graffiti images that's represented in the exhibition with Ruben Ortiz Torres's work, Urban Landscapes, from 2006. Importantly, the project involved taking the virtual representations of graffiti into the public through unannounced public performances. And this is the still that we're looking at here, is the documentation of these unannounced public performances. The artist temporarily converted a Ford delivery truck of the sort used by film crews into a mobile screen and projector. Emanating from the rear of the truck, the graffiti animations traveled the city, and in this way, the urban placemaking activity of graffiti was rendered even more mobile, more performative, and more interactive. Transforming the city into a screen, the video of the morphing graffiti cast ephemeral volumes of light onto the surrounding environment as the projected graffiti continued to mutate on the walls. Furthermore, the projected image interacted with the site, and this becomes quite complicated, it's better seen in the video, as the live footage from outside was mixed with the morphing animation. In this way, what was projected onto the cityscape as graffiti also contained representations of its immediate surroundings, which were morphed into and alongside the graffiti image. The project's title, The Manhattan Project, appeared as a logo on this truck, mobile graffiti projector, and the phrase "Stop Proliferation of Unclear Threat" was printed beneath it. This title wittily likens the unclear threat targeted by anti-graffiti campaigns to the top-secret efforts of the U.S. to develop atomic weapons during World War II, the so-called Manhattan Project. In many ways, the techniques of virtual morphing and projected graffiti were developed as a means to circumvent the overly reactive criminalization of urban graffiti traditions, which you can see through the Atlanta story, through Spray Paint LACMA, into this project. And likewise, the project endeavored to create public art while evading the stringent prohibitions on public space and expression. And with that, I'll end. Thank you.